Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I am Donna Prisgintas.
We are here in the middle of summer with a special guest, Gary Guthrie. He's going to be talking about carrots and lots of other
Gary
good
Guthrie,
things.
Gary Guthrie, the carrot king.
Gary Guthrie, the carrot king. That's all one thought there. Gary Guthrie, the carrot king. First, a little report on what's in the market right now. Are tomatoes here yet?
Let's have the tomato report. This has been a cliffhanger all summer. I've been using the hothouse yellow tomatoes that I found at the downtown Ames Market from Lee's Greens are quite tasty for hothouse tomatoes in lieu of the real thing. But I did go out to the North Grand Mall and found a few heirlooms are actually in. There were green zebras. There were brandy wines. Just a few, but we're getting there. We're getting there. We don't have to hold our breath anymore. We are going to have tomatoes this summer. What do you think, Lana?
I had my first brandy wine that actually tasted like something, which is good.
Oh, what a relief.
And a few smaller tomatoes, which are actually starting to taste like something. So things are looking up. Things are looking up.
Really, after the very short and unhappy strawberry season, the all too brief blueberry season, at least we're going to have tomatoes.
You had a nice combination of
I did. I made a yellow tomato salsa. So I used those tomatoes that I got, even though they were hothouse tomatoes. Pardon, snobby little me. But I used the yellow tomatoes, and I put corn in it. So it was a yellow salsa. And so it was lime juice, corn, chopped sweet onions. I did not use cilantro. I used mint and basil. Salt and pepper. So it was the yellow corn, the yellow tomatoes, lime juice, salt, pepper, chopped mint, and chopped basil. And it was yum and very pretty. So that's the first tomato recipe that we've given you for the season.
There we go.
To follow, hopefully.
It must be summer now. Gary Guthrie is with us today, and we're glad to have him, too. Gary Guthrie has been a longtime resident of Ames in Nevada. And he has Growing Harmony Farm, just southeast of the Ames area. And he is retired, sort of. Yeah, he's retired. He's retired from a long and fertile career as a producer of wonderful vegetables for CSA and for wholesale. And welcome, Gary Guthrie.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here.
Good. So you have this wonderful farm, Growing Harmony Farm. What a wonderful name. How did you get to where you are? What made Growing Harmony Farm come to fruition?
Well, let's have a summation of your whole life in 30 seconds or less.
Well, I graduated from Iowa State in 1979 in agronomy, but I had a desire to work overseas, so I ended up with the Mennonite Central Committee in Bolivia and El Salvador. And as I was helping peasant farmers in both of those countries, I always thought, could I really do this? Could I farm? And because I was supposed to be helping them, even though I didn't have a lot of – I had all this intellectual stuff from Iowa State, but it wasn't very practical. So my journey brought me back to Iowa. And after 6 years of living in Des Moines, the opportunity – this whole thing with CSA's, Community Supported Agriculture, was just getting started. And I went to a workshop and walked out of that, and I said, maybe this is it. This is the opportunity to integrate my community development, agriculture development, and my own spirituality in my life's endeavor. So at 40 years old, I finally figured out what I was going to do for the rest of my life.
Well, and you were a pioneer in the AIM CSA movement
right,
here.
I was one of the first CSAs wasn't the first, but one of the first CSAs in Iowa. Which I started that in the summer of 1997.
So that was a brave step for any farmer, looking at consumers in the eye and saying, give me your money, I will feed you. So good for you. Good for you. And it worked. Your farm
worked
is lovely.
Well.
And you have fed lots of folks. So, but you're not doing that anymore.
Not to the scale that I was. I moved into it. When we moved to the farm, just south of Highway 30 between Ames and Nevada. It was with the idea that when my parents got to a certain age and needed more help, then I would scale back my farming, and that's where we're at now. So I just sailed to friends, former CSA members, and through Farm to Folk CSA a little bit too. But primarily carrots and garlic are my two main things that I sell now.
And I've been to your farm. I've visited your farm. You tend things well. Your garlic is huge. Your carrots are world-renowned. I have always found carrots rather fussy myself, but you have honestly been dubbed the Carrot King. Can you tell me about that, Gary?
Well, I'm going to read you a story. It kind of happened almost by accident, but I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs from this writer, Jay Wagner, who unfortunately is no longer with us, but this came out in Iowa Edible River Valley. And I didn't know he was writing the article until it came out, and then it said, Gary Guthrie, colon, the Carrot King. So I was surprised by it, but I went with it. I've had a lot of good fun with it.
This is the Iowa modesty disclaimer. Anybody who's so, the Carrot King, he was not self-named.
So I did see a quote a number of years ago by Paul Cezanne, and when I saw the quote, I said, I have to have a T-shirt, that's the T-shirt for my farm. And Lana actually designed the carrots on the T-shirt, and under the carrots it says, the day is coming when a single carrot, freshly observed, will set off a revolution. And on the back it says, that day has come, Growing Harmony Farm. And I think that that's the real essence of the local food movement of CSAs, is that it brought flavor back into the palate of so many more people now in the United States. And I'm grateful that it really has started a revolution. And part of my goal is to help people understand that there are more varieties of carrots than the one variety that you can eat in the grocery store. It would be equivalent to going to a grocery store and only being able to buy delicious red apples. And there's so many more varieties out there. But let me read this. This is a short story about the first time that Jay Wagner, the author, bit into one of my Bolero carrots, which will be harvested in October. Consider the ordinary carrot. It's a decent snack, crunchy, slightly sweet, satisfying. I've been eating them for years, often as an afternoon snack. But I had never truly experienced a carrot until I met Gary Guthrie. According to the USDA, carrots are the fifth most consumed vegetable in the country. Americans eat an average of 9.5 pounds each year. But in 2003, the year I sampled my first Guthrie-grown carrot, my family consumed nearly 40 pounds of them in the span of 3 months. They are that good. Here's the thing about supermarket carrots. They are bred to be mechanically harvested, withstand shipping across the country. Most carrots come from California, which produces 76% of the nation's carrots, and sit on the shelf at the grocery store for weeks. The average carrot travels 1,700 miles from farm to grocery store, and it tastes like it. The first time I ate one of Guthrie's carrots at the Iowa Vegetable Growers Conference in Ames, I was so surprised by the flavor that I giggled after my first bite. Then I looked around to see if anyone was watching me, and I ate another, and then another, and another. So
I think carrots are, for children, it's often the first vegetable they will readily eat. I call it the gateway to vegetable eating, you know. It's a gateway food.
And I gave, when I was first starting, I gave some carrots to a friend, and they had a 7-year-old son, and a minute later he came back. He says, Mom, can I have another carrot? And I just looked at her and I said, when was the last time you heard that?
True. So, what's your secret? Why are your carrots so darn tasty?
Well, variety selection makes a big difference. Iowa's loamy soil is really important, nice loose soil. Also, the boleros, particularly the fall carrots, these are storage carrots. So, the advantage that we have in the north of the United States is that we have warm days and cold nights. And in October, especially after a light frost, the starches in the carrots turn to sugar. And therefore, sugar helps things store better longer. And after
it
light frost,
makes them taste better too.
It becomes a completely different vegetable. Mm-hmm. They become translucent, super crispy and super, super sweet. And so for my fall carrots, that's particularly important. For the, my summer carrots, it's varietal selection. And most of the carrots, there's different classes of carrots. One, about the only kind that we eat in the store is called Imperators. But the kind that many small market growers grow are Nantes. They're a French-style carrot. And they're almost coreless. And therefore, the commercial growers can't grow them because they're so crisp that they would just break up in mechanical harvesting. And that's the advantage that someone like myself has over commercial growers.
They're also delicious.
Well, right. I've looked at its seed catalogs, and carrots go from long and skinny with a pointy end to the short and stubby with round ends, even to little balls,
yeah,
ball-shaped things.
The round ones. So, and colors, too.
And colors, too. Yeah. So I'm sure carrots have been around for a long time, perhaps. Are they a new world vegetable, an old world vegetable?
They've been around for a very long time. I want to read a little bit from the Carrot Museum. I found on a little bit of carrot history here.
Is this at your house?
I wrote a little pamphlet called The Carrot Chronicles, highlighting some of the stories that I've accumulated from consumers, but also a little history. The rise of the carrot as a vegetable, like any good fairy tale, has humble origins. The bright orange fleshy root vegetable we know today as a carrot is a far cry from its wild ancestor, a small, tough, pale-fleshed, acrid root plant. Probably no one would be eating carrots that were once small, very thin, red, purple, and even black taproots with a distasteful bitterness if no one had taken an interest in improving their flavor. Luckily, some motivated Dutch people took carrots under their horticultural wings and taught them how to be sweet. So, during the 1500s, during the reign of the House of Orange.
Oh, how nice.
some early breeders took a yellow carrot from north of Africa and bred it with a red carrot, and lo and behold, the orange carrot.
It is a fairy tale.
It has royal beginnings.
Oh, the House of Orange Carrots.
Yep. And they've been improved on ever since. And now, of course, we can find some purple, some yellow carrots in the market. But their taste isn't nearly as good as the orange ones right now. And maybe now would be a good time. I brought some carrots, a number one and a number two. I won't name the varieties just yet. But the distinct flavor of a carrot, if you taste one that is kind of bitter, there's different levels of a chemical called terpenoids. And that's what gives the carrots their classic carrot flavor. And if you have a really strong bitter one, they're very high in terpenoids, and some of them terpenoids have actually been bred out of them. But the ripe carrot has that classic carrot taste, but not too strong. So they're eating number one right now. Mm-hmm. Why don't you describe the flavor of what you're eating.
It has that little aftertaste. It's a carrot taste that I'm used to. They pulled out of the garden, carrot taste, a little bit of a, not bitter. I suppose it's a little bitter, but it has a little bitter aftertaste. But that's,
yeah, it has a double flavor. You get a little of the sweet and then definitely the lingering slight bitterness that you can get. Not unpalatable, but a carrot flavor and obviously very crunchy. Crunch, crunch, crunch. This is, I would call it, a classic carrot flavor at its most, at norm kind of thing.
That okay. was carrot number one.
Carrot number okay. one, okay.
Go ahead, try number two.
Number two, more crunching, guys.
These women know they're carrots, so I didn't want to bias their opinion with the variety name. This is the new variety that I'm
okay, this
trying.
One is actually drier than the first one, but sweeter. But still that little carrot twit of bitterness at the end, but it's sweeter.
This has more fun in the nose.
It's a slightly fuller, rounder flavor.
Yeah, it goes up in your nose, and it's more fresh tasting.
Even though it's drier than the first one, I would choose number two for flavor. I'm not sure, but I'm guessing since the number one is wetter, that you might get more juice out of it and less pulp. So number one might make a good juicing carrot. And I think number two has a slightly larger, louder flavor.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I don't have my Boleros. Won't be ready till October, but...
if you're going to bring samples, we'll have you back in October.
The first one is my classic Nelson carrot. It's my favorite, up till now, my favorite summer carrot. Mm-hmm. And it's a shorter season variety. It's a Nantes. It has that rounded end. For a summer carrot, very sweet and crunchy.
Yeah.
The second one is a new one from Johnny Select Seed called Romance. And I'm looking for something that would compete with taste, and it has a nice strong top growth, so it can resist the all the rains that we have better. Because carrots can have some disease problems if there's too much rain.
Well, this would be the year to trial.
Nelson has had some real problems in the past with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so Romance did a nice job. And it does have a bit more of a classic, a little bit firmer,
mm-hmm.
not quite so crisp maybe, but that classic carrot flavor.
And so you're happy with this?
I'm very happy. I'm planning on growing both of them from now on.
Yeah, I think it has a really, for a summer carrot, since we can't have the Boleros yet, I think it was a wise choice.
Yes. So you mentioned problems with rain. Are there other problems that carrots have? Talk about growing carrots.
One of the things that I think people shy away from growing carrots is because they perhaps treat them like green beans or a lot of other things. They grow out. They just, in Iowa's good soil, you just throw them out there and they grow, right? Except that there are some vegetables that doesn't work so well, and the carrots is one of them. Carrots has one of the smallest, most fragile of seeds, and so you have to really baby it for a long time. And the main thing is, besides keeping it weeded, is germination. And so it has to have a moist surface for the carrot to break through that hard pan. If it's dry, it's kind of a hard pan, especially after hard rains. And so I lay burlap down. I have 100-foot-long, yard-wide beds of for my vegetables. And I have rolls of burlap that I purchase and lay them out, put bricks on them to keep them from flying away, and then I keep them watered.
You seed them before you put the burlap?
I seed them before I put the burlap down. And
carrot seed is very, very small. Do you just put it on the top and then just step on it?
Just about a quarter inch down. I have an earthway planter, so that's what I use for long beds. But you can make a small furrow in a home garden. Just make a small quarter inch furrow, cover them, and then just pat them down with your hand. And then if you can just get some burlap from a coffee store or whatever, and that'll work. Something to keep it moist.
Mm-hmm.
And if you plant them in April, it takes 2 weeks to 3 weeks for them to germinate. In May,
they grow up through the
burlap? You have to check it every day. Or about, like in May, it's usually 10 days to germination. In June, it's one week.
Roll
in
the
July,
burlap
it's usually
off,
5 days.
And then they start coming up?
So as they are emerging, then you pull the burlap off. And usually you can get a pretty good stand that way.
Well, my problem is when the carrot seeds are growing, so is a lot of grass. And weeding carrots is not one of my favorite things.
It's my least favorite thing, too. And I used to grow like 5 or 6 rows in a bed, and I would painstakingly go through and hand weed on our hands and knees. And, in fact, I told my workers when I had 2 full-time workers that everything I do – on my 2-acre garden was to minimize labor so I could have time to weed carrots. But now I went to just 3 rows in a bed, and so I'll drag my stirrup hoe between the rows. So I've changed my way of growing my carrots so I can minimize the amount of weeding that I do.
You got smarter when you got older.
Some of us take longer.
Well, I'm awfully glad you are the carrot king.
Because then Lana doesn't have to grow them.
But there are a lot more people. When I first started, no one wanted to mess with it, and that's kind of why I became known as the carrot king. I was the only one that could grow
and
had the patience and the fortitude. to grow that many carrots. And I think my best year was a number of years ago when I harvested about 7,500 pounds of carrots in a season, almost a half acre of carrots. But fortunately, there are a lot more growers growing good carrots now in central Iowa.
Tell us kind of who you've mentored into the carrot business.
Tabletop Farms in Nevada has been doing a good job. Elliot out at Prairie Moon has been growing carrots. Mm-hmm. Small Potatoes Farm in Midburg I've been selling at Wheatsfield now, so they've replaced me, as well as One Step at a Time Gardens.
Tim and Jen. Tim and Jen.
Are growing quite a few carrots.
Yeah, they're good farmers.
And they're growing
too.
A lot more carrots than they used to. They used to buy my carrots for their CSA, and then I would get squash from them.
That's right. That's how I got introduced to them.
Yeah.
Well, no such thing as too many carrots, I have to say.
No.
I have a lot. I use them. Here was my, when I used to have to cook, like there was a period where I had to develop recipes to get more vegetables in for children who thought they wouldn't eat vegetables. So, like when I make a meatloaf, I will put the carrots in my food processor, grind them down to the consistency of ground beef, and then you can make your meatloaf up to a third carrots. It makes it light. They never notice they've eaten a vegetable. And it reduces the caloric content as well. So they work really good for, because they're kind of, they can be flavor neutral, kind of.
Yeah, but Donna, I would only do that if you were buying your carrots at the regular supermarket. I wouldn't ruin my carrots by eating, by doing it that way.
Oh, but you can't imagine.
Because once the kids eat my carrots, they don't want to eat anything else.
Gary, there's no such thing as too many carrots.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
The meatloaf, believe me, you get some good grass-fed beef.
Right, right.
And Gary's carrots, it's a meatloaf sublime.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
We're not...
I'll trust you on that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
With a carrot salad on the side.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yes, I've learned to like carrots. And eating carrots raw is really a pleasure. The carrots from a regular grocery store always... Well, they've just... have been tasting bitter to me after, so you've spoiled it.
Or no taste at all. I mean, just neutral.
Yeah.
And I do, you know, as a chef, one of the things you're trained to do in looking at the food that you're cooking is making sure it's colorful. And so carrots are always an inexpensive, readily available color component that you put a little, like if you're making coleslaw, you will shred a little carrots in to get that color interest up. And using Gary's carrots. We don't waste the carrots. We're just enhancing whatever we're cooking. I can tell I'm going to have to make him some of this meatloaf. Convince him. He's looking skeptical.
Carrots are great. Let's take a little music break here while we finish our carrot chewing. Yeah, there we go. We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking to Gary Guthrie, the Carrot King, on KHOI Radio, community radio here in Story County. So, as we're chewing on our carrots, recipes come to mind.
Oh, yes. Well, we just talked about putting them, hiding extra vegetables in meatloaf, and I'm going to have to make this recipe for Gary because he doesn't believe me. The other thing that that I've done, and he's probably aghast that we're using his carrots this way, but they make wonderful, if you juice the carrots and then you make a risotto, which is traditionally a slow-cooked big round rice that you cook with stock, but if instead of stock you use carrot juice, you end up with this gorgeous kind of golden light orange risotto that has just the sweetest, most wonderful flavor and texture. So that's another unorthodox use of carrots that I would highly recommend.
Also, carrots, like other root vegetables, maybe carrots especially, they braise well. Hit them with a little intense heat. They're wonderful. Either in
stir fry.
Yes. Under a fry pan, in a fry pan, or at any way to make them crispy in the oven.
Yeah.
Roasting is great. Roasting. They get really sweet.
Yep.
I often, especially when the carrots are just coming in, if they're big and fat, you can quarter them and then you just toss them with olive oil, salt, and pepper. Maybe throw a little marjoram. You don't want to cover the flavor because it's subtle. And just roast them till they're. So you can poke them with a fork, just like roasting a potato, because that roasting process concentrates the sweetness.
It's a real joy to actually even kind of forget them a little bit so they get a little crunchy brown on the outside. Oh, mm-hmm. I like them that way.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like they're burnt, but they're not. But they're not. Gary, you mentioned about the care you take growing things, and it comes from who you are, your spiritual background, and you farm with your heart. I appreciate that. I've seen how you take care of things. Your beds are always well mulched and fussed over and
loved.
Loved. When I want to know how things are going, I usually give Gary a call. Like, how is your garlic? How is your tomatoes? How is your garlic and your tomatoes this year?
My garlic is very good and one of the better quality crops I've had for some time. I don't know if you mentioned previously that previous couple of years we had some problems with disease, mm-hmm. and I lost all my garlic seed, so I had to start over. And Joe Lynch got me in touch with his supplier, and it turned out really nice. So the quality is very good, not as big as normal. Each year will get bigger as I select for the size. But it's exceptional year. And carrots have been very good. I just harvested my first small basket of tomatoes last night. So my parents love tomatoes, so they get as many as they want. And looking forward to a little bit of canning here pretty soon.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
So, yeah, things are going very this July has been spectacular. So
good. Good. And I also happen to know, and I promised Donna I'd ask you this, you're a man who knows his way around a pie. So, and I've had really good pie from you. So, tell me, do you have a secret for pie crust
that you're willing to?
Oh, absolutely. I believe in sharing the wealth of pie.
Carrot pie? Do you do a carrot pie?
I have not done a carrot pie. It's evolved over time. It started out in Bolivia, actually, my pie baking. And when people came to visit, I promised them a banana cream pie. And so in the span of 6 years in both Bolivia and El Salvador, I baked at least 300 pies during those 6 years. And my dad challenged me to keep track of my pies. So this last year, starting in the month of August, my birthday's in August, so I'm now at pie number 69, so I average one pie every 5.3 days, seems like.
69 pies just for this year.
Yeah, mostly sweet, some savory.
Mm-hmm.
But
you're good.
I have found this last while I've been making just the very best pie crust, and it's simply if it's a two-crusted, you would double this. But it's one cup of flour And I've actually been getting pastry flour from Wheatsfield because it is locally grown.
Oh, the local
farm.
Yeah,
it is exceptional. It is exceptional. It really makes for a very delicate, very delicate.
Early morning harvest early morning pastry harvest. Flour.
It is very good.
Mm-hmm. Very fresh.
So one-third.
Tastes like real wheat.
Yep. One-third cup. And I'm sorry, I'm not a purist here, but I have found that the best oil or lard, whatever you want to call it, or shortening, is Crisco butter flavored, non-trans fat. I'm sorry, that's confessions here. I've tried to work with butter, and I guess maybe I need to continue working with it, but it always comes out stiffer.
Well, mm-hmm. we're of the butter and lard persuasion. Mixed.
Okay. Well, so one
try.
Of these times we'll have to have a little contest or tasting here.
What a hardship.
So one-third, the mm-hmm. ratio is one-third.
To one.
Mm-hmm. And ice,
one
quarter
third
cup.
Flour.
One cup flour.
To one-third.
One-third lard or
yes.
whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. Fat.
One quarter cup of ice water.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little bit of salt. And then a friend told me about this also for it helps extract the water out of it, makes it flakier, is I put a teaspoon of teaspoon to a tablespoon of powdered sugar in it.
Powdered sugar. Okay, new tip.
And so I mix
that
in, and then I put it in the refrigerator overnight.
Oh,
and
overnight.
It's at least an hour, and they talk about it. It relaxes the glutens mm-hmm. in the flour. And ever since I've been doing that, I roll it out. It might be a little moist, but I roll it out on flour. And I prefer to use ceramic pie plates, and it mm-hmm. seems like a nice even heat. And ever since I've been doing that for this past year, I have not had one single crust go bad on me. I mean, that it really was flaky, tasty, and light. So that's
pie.
It. Very it's really simple. It's very, very simple.
A few more tips for the pie makers.
Very, very good.
I'm planning on going a workshop at Wheatsfield when they have their I asked to be their first demonstrator for their new kitchen facility when it's built. And it's going to be Pies by Guys. It's an all-male workshop.
Okay, well do try the lard-butter combination before then because it's at Wheatsfield's. You don't want to be hawking Crisco.
Right. I'll do my best.
So to speak. Excuse me, Crisco.
But Gary's pies are dandy. So the Carrot King bakes. Yes. Yes. I have one more thing to say about carrots. My favorite thing when I was young to eat was carrots in orange jello. Oh, that was a good thing.
shredded carrots in orange jello.
And both my cohorts are going, oh, my goodness.
Oh, no.
That was a good
we
thing.
We grew up on anyway. Jello.
Yes, that was good. Anyway.
So that leads us to the summer recipe of the week, the dessert recipe. And guess what it is? Jello. So the thing is, Jello is actually a trademark name. So the French call it jelly, and they don't mean jelly like we mean, but that's what they call their Jello. It's called jelly. The French call it gelée, G-E-L-L-E-E. And I think that's been used more because we're having a little Jello renaissance in culinary circles here. And so on most white tablecloth restaurants are now calling it gelée. But really, it's Jello, but not Jello brand. It's unflavored gelatin, which you can buy at the store. I actually have a source online. I get an organic gelatin made from pig's feet. You have to know it's not vegetarian. For vegetarians, people do use carrageenan, which is a seaweed. What's the other seaweed they... I can't remember, but you can make vegetarian jellos. They're a bit trickier to handle. Historically, jellos started out in the savory department, and as you're cooking down meat, like a long, slow roast of pork or beef and chicken, too. Well, if you cook it long enough, it extracts the gelatinous materials from, like, the ends of the bones or the hooves or the – and that is where you actually are getting Jello. So the first gelatins came from savory dishes because actually sugar was rare and very expensive. So it didn't become – I mean, it's old, old, old. It didn't become a sweet – like in the 16th century, it began to be sweetened Jell-Os. And, by the time we got to the Victorians, they were molding and sugaring away and making all kinds of elaborate things. And, you know, then in the – I wonder when it first started being Jell-O. Maybe the 40, think the 40s, the 50s, when we started commercializing and it became Jell-O brand. I'm not.
Yeah, maybe it came like, you know, with the atomic bomb, one of those scientific discoveries.
Yes, it would. Well, something, because, you know, the 50s and 60s, particularly the 50s, were the era of gelatin, carrot, orange gelatin, and Jell-O molds and. What was that? Something called surprise salad, or every church supper had it, where you mixed up marshmallows, Jell-O, mayonnaise. So, of course, then it went completely out of fashion after that. But now we're having a Jell-O revival. So I would suggest trying flavors, you know, making your own. Gelatin either comes in powder or sheets. Powder is readily available at any grocery store.
Sheets, as in?
It's called sheets of Jell-O. That's what commercial kitchens use.
Oh, sheets.
But I don't even know where you would buy them outside of commercial places. Just use the powdered stuff. It's easier. And the package will actually say how much gelatin or how many packets you put per amount of liquid. And, you know, it's obviously you bloom the gelatin on something cold, and then you heat it up to dissolve the gelatin, and then you can so you're like, if you're making – okay, if you wanted to make a real carrot, savory carrot gelatin, that would make a very nice dessert. I would not only grate the carrots, but I would juice the carrots, and then I would probably put maybe – I would want some of the juice to remain raw. I wouldn't want to heat all of it. So I would probably bloom it on some maybe juice with maybe a little lemon juice in it. And then I would heat part of that. And then I would add after it had dissolved, then I would add some more of the cold fresh carrot juice and sort of in the carrots and then put it in a mold like that. And you would have a savory salad carrot Jell-O. Does that sound?
Actually, that sounds pretty good.
I think we could manage something like
along
that.
Along with the meatloaf.
Exactly. We could have carrots in every course, okay? And then after that, you could have the carrot cake for dessert, right?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
I'm going to just read quickly this little – this is a suggestive recipe, rhubarb and rosé Jell-O, as, you know, a complete departure from things we've eaten in the 50s. So it's says for this, this is from a book, an English book called Jelly with Bompas and Parr. These are two young hipsters who made a reputation for doing wild display parties, events with beautiful structured Jell-Os and colors and unbelievable. So this one is for this jelly. Which we would say Jell-O recipe, you release the juice from the rhubarb by stewing it. Stewing also works well to release juice from fruits such as plums, cherries, and blueberries. Many will be familiar with stewing rhubarb, but putting the juice to use in a Jell-O makes for a sublime experience, even if it's pink and throbbing. So he's got... oh, dear. Oh, yes, here. I thought it was in kilos. Okay. No, 2 pounds and 4 ounces of rhubarb, 7 ounces of water, 6 ounces of sugar, 1 star anise, juice of half of a lemon, and 4 ounces of rosé, and then he says 5 leaves of gelatin. So we'd have to figure out from the liquid or from the powder how to translate that. But basically, you liquefy the rhubarb by cooking it with the sugar and the water and the star anise, and then you strain it so that you get clear liquid, and then you measure the volume of the rhubarb juice, and that's how you calculate, you know, by the liquid volume is how much Jell-O. The more gelatin you use, the firmer it will be. And if you want it to be really wiggly, you can make it looser. If you want to mold it, you need it kind of in the middle so you can unmold it. Oh, a quick unmolding is, you know, you have to run something full of hot water, really hot water, just enough to put the molded product in up to the lip. You don't want the hot water on it. Hold it just long enough that it starts to wiggle and then floop, over onto the plate like that. Or another thing, we went through a period of Jell-O shooters, I believe, which were vodka-laced usually, and you could get – you'd have to be careful because you get really – have more alcohol in it than you think. But, like, this one has rosé in it. I did one time with port wine. So you make the Jell-O a little bit thicker, and you just put it in, like, a flat baking pan. You cut them into cubes and just serve them, like, one-inch cubes. So after dinner, you bring out the little shooters, basically. And this rosé rhubarb would probably make a very good one. Even a dessert where you had ice cream or vanilla pudding with cubes of rhubarb rosé jelly decorating it would probably be fun. So that's the summer tip, is Jell-O. Make homemade, reasonably old-fashioned. Be creative with the flavors. Don't buy the prepackaged Jell-O.
That sounds lovely. That sounds lovely.
Kids like this stuff.
I really
too,
like,
you know,
the I really like the sculptural possibilities. Sounds great. Welcome back. You're listening to KHOI Radio, community radio for the heart of Iowa. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about lots of things today. We're talking with Gary Guthrie about carrots. We're talking with Donna about Jell-O. We've been listening to some English country dance music, and I chose that music because I wanted to remind myself that on Wednesdays I can go English country dancing here in Ames.
Every Wednesday?
I'll give you the times and dates here. It's really interesting. English country dancing is a lovely sort of thing to do. It's a very English sort of, more sedate sort of dancing as opposed to barn dancing, but wonderful. You can have a wonderful time doing it. Think of Jane Austen, Pride and Prejudice, that sort of dancing. So although it looks rather uptight, there's a lot going on underneath the surface. And the music is lovely. The music is lovely. To find English country dancing, there's a group here in Ames, and they meet on the first and third Sundays on campus, and they meet on the second and fourth Wednesdays in the evening at the First Christian Church on 6th Street in downtown Ames. For more information on that, go to lindasuzanne@aol.com.
Spell that, please.
Linda Suzanne?
Like Linda, S-U-Z-A-N-N-E?
No.
Yeah,
Linda,
spell it.
L-I-N-D-A.
Uh-huh.
S-U-Z-A-N.
Ah.
Linda Suzanne.
Okay.
At AOL.com. That's Linda Lieberman here in town. She's been involved in the dance community for a long time. And she plays music and teaches dancing, and it's a wonderful thing to do. So first and third Sundays or second and fourth Wednesdays, look for the English Country Dance Group here in town. And you can find that at Linda Suzanne, S-U-Z-A-N, at AOL.com. All right. So English Country Dance to your heart's content. And there's also the barn dancing coming up later in the month. I'll tell you more about that later. If you need any reason to celebrate. I just whipped out my little list of reasons to celebrate here. I have the Pagan Book of Days here, always handy. For these
for every party girl should have a good excuse, right?
For these few days of the last end of July in the middle of summer, we can celebrate the Italian goddess called Farina.
Which day is this?
This is the 25th of July. That is her day.
Coming right up, Farina.
Farina. Now is a time when drought may begin to bite, and she is the goddess of springs. So think of cool water and springs. July 26th, Schleppnir. Celebrate Schleppnir. He's the he is the shamanic steed for Odin. It's a six-legged horse. It's a six-legged horse. Think about that, all right? On July 27th.
I'm trying to imagine how to celebrate a six-legged horse.
I don't know what you do.
That must involve a little drinking, I think.
No, I think the six-legged horse. Okay. All right. On the 27th of July, this is my favorite. It is the day of Saint Pantaleon. Saint Pantaleon, worshipped today, was, among other things, the patron saint of trousers.
All right, everybody has to wear pantaloons on Pantaloon Day. Okay.
Yes, yes. And let's see what else we have.
And that was what date was that?
That's the 27th
of July. The 27th, so I'd be sure to wear my pantaloons on that day. Okay.
Yes.
Maybe that'll bring great good fortune if you wear pantaloons on the 27th of July.
Yes. And then we have the god Thor with his goat-pulled chariot.
Now, Thor is heavy duty, guys. We got to really give him his just desserts.
Yes. Oh, just desserts. He's one of ascendant powers of orderliness and power. And it is also the same day that the sainted Norwegian King Olaf was slain around Lammas Day. And the traditional symbol is an axe. So we go out of July with a bit of chop some wood or something.
Here.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. So there's things to celebrate. There's like horses and goats. And also, one more thing in the garden. I harvested an herb. I harvested my epazote. I told you earlier in the year about planting epazote, a kind of a strange-smelling, tall, leafy, greeny thing.
That's the one that takes the farts out of the beans.
That's well put, Donna. That is well put. You add that to any bean dish, and it deals with flatulence. Yes, it does. And I've done that before, and it works real fine. This first time I've grown it and dried it, worked really well. It still retains that really unique sort of musty smell. So I'm sure it'll
like
work.
The flavor in savory dishes. I'm good.
Yeah.
But you dehydrated it, right? Is that how you dried it?
Actually, I picked it and dried it during a really hot, hot, dry day. I just laid it in my greenhouse, and it dried in a day.
Oh, well, then I'm going to try it.
The leaves
I'm
are very small,
mine.
And and it worked out just fine. So epazote.
Now,
epazote.
Wait, did you pick it? You left the root intact it might grow more? How did you pick it?
I cut it off about 5 inches from the ground. There's still more plant coming.
Okay.
I cut a big...
I'm going to do it.
Stemmy parts off the top.
Okay.
You have an announcement of an upcoming event.
Oh, right. Once again, we're going to mention the Booze and Blues coming up on August 17th. It's a fundraiser for our wonderful community radio, KHOI 89.1 FM. And it's it's an evening where we're going to have several of our producers, show producers, are really into blues, so they're going to curate some very special music all evening, and it's going to be at Della Vita, the wine bar on Main Street. So we'll have great blues music all evening. We'll have wine, and Vesuvius Pizza is going to pull up their portable wood-fired oven, and we're going to have samples of pizza as all, you know, to crunch down and fill yourself up with. And then we are going to have a wonderful silent auction. As we get a little closer, we'll kind of let you know what kind of items we're going to have. But that's the fundraising part for KHOI. And it starts at 5 o'clock on a wonderful, we hope, August summer afternoons. So it's going from 5 until, I forgot, 8 or 9, but you can keep on, you can go later and stay because they are open until 2 o'clock in the evening if it's, or in the early morning hours. So 5 o'clock, August 17th at Della Vita, a fundraiser for our radio station.
Yeah, this radio station exists only because of volunteers and people who love radio.
Yes, and Donna and Lana will be at the fundraiser sipping wine and serving pizza.
Oh, good. I was kind of hoping.
To tell you about that part, Lana.
I was kind of hoping we'd be in on this.
Yeah, yeah. Just so come on down, chat us up. We'll take cooking questions, suggestions for what you want to hear on the show. Tell us if you're listening and what you think.
Yes, if you want to contact us, you can go to khoifm.org. That's the website. You can find Donna Lana Kitchen
under talk shows. And they are now archived. So if you've missed something, you can play it while you're washing the dishes or some other entertainment like that.
Right. And also to let you know that this Booze and Blues event coming up to celebrate our radio station is the culminating event for the National Grassroots Radio Conference, which is coming to Ames August 14th to the 17th. To find out more about that, if you're interested in radio, all sorts of things. If you're interested
in
talk,
like three or four days of events with people all over the country who are in this very vibrant national community of community radio.
Right.
Should be a bunch of characters in town, let me tell you.
Yeah, that's what makes up a community.
Yeah, and it'll be in downtown Ames. Some of it's at the Octagon. Some of it's, of course, at the radio station, which is across the street from the Octagon.
And if you want to find more about that, go to GRC 2014, Grassroots Radio Conference 2014, GRC2014.net.
And what's the date? We're kicking it off on a Thursday, August 14th, and there'll be a potluck. Of course, the community invited.
Right, if you would like to help.
And I'm making meatloaf with carrots in it. I am. Not a joke. I truly am. Gary, you better come.
Okay.
It'll be a fine job.
Maybe Gary will donate the carrots for the meatloaf.
Just to challenge me a little bit.
Okay, all right. So we'll be having the Growing Harmony carrot and beef pork meatloaf. So come on down, folks.
Right. I want to thank you for coming and visiting with us today, Gary.
And that's August 14th for the carrot beef meatloaf.
Yes.
It's been a pleasure being here.
Good. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Today we've been talking to Gary Guthrie, the ever so popular carrot king of central Iowa. We love his food. And we've also heard a little bit about Jell-O. Maybe we'll hear more about that in the future. I think Jell-O has wonderful possibilities, and so do carrots. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We've had engineering by Rick Morrison. Listen to the Donna Lana Kitchen Tuesdays at noon. It's repeated at 7 p.m. in the evening. And check out the Donna Lana Kitchen archives on the website. Eat good food, enjoy life.